Hey friends, this is Kenny Jiang, and this is the Church Online Podcast. Thank you for joining us for another episode. We are here today with an interesting topic for discussion with my friend DJ Chuang, who's opposite of me on the screen. Welcome, DJ, to the show.
Hello, Kenny. I'm happy to be on the show again.
Now, today we're going to talk about some nuts and bolts of the internet. We have teed up as a topic here something that comes up actually quite often is some topics of behind the scenes of managing domain names well. I think that's one of the things that a lot of church staff kind of fell into a role of internet and digital stuff, and sometimes there's a lot of complexities, and I'm really glad that you are available to actually come and share a little bit about it. Before we get started, let me just share a little bit about our sponsor. Today's episode is brought to us by a really good partner. It's the .church top-level domain name. Now, the .church domain name is something that you probably are familiar with. It is used by tens of thousands of churches, like Life.church or Canvas.church, and they use it to connect and engage with visitors online, and it's part of the entire portfolio over at this company, Identity Digital, which manages and offers hundreds of domain names. .church domain is one of them. And the fact that it comes with added security and phishing protection is something that we can all appreciate. Now, DJ, for those of you that don't know you, why don't you just give us a quick 30-second rundown of your backgrounds and who you are for this audience?
Sure. I've worked with churches and ministries for over 20 years now, usually helping in the space of church and technology and social media, some blogging, some podcasting, and always a champion for how churches can be on the leading edge of using technology to further their mission.
I love that.
Was that 30 seconds?
As we dive into this topic, that was 30 seconds. As we dive into this topic, I would just like to say one of the things, DJs, you've had some extensive experience working with domain names on both the consumer side, but also like the inner workings, the inner plumbing of it. And so I love the fact that we can call on you as an expert today for some of these questions. Now, the first question I have, if we could just dive right into it, is that many churches have multiple domain names, right? It's like you got websites, and then you got social media accounts and emails and databases and all this tech. It's like we accumulate this stuff. It can be quite a jungle, right?
Yes.
Even I think I have almost 100 domain names personally. Now, can we talk about how to manage all those things? How do we manage them better beyond just keeping up with registrations, renewals, where you get some email reminders once in a while? Do you have any tips right out of the bat? Can you give us some simplifying wisdom and advice?
Yeah, so the starting point is just tracking down and keeping a track of the domain names that belong to your church. And that could be hours of work right there, because often churches have volunteers that start their website or staff that leave and don't leave behind the crucial information: the domain name information, the email address, the login with the registrar for each of those domain names that belong to the church. And then if your church is larger, let's say over 1,000, then you've got different ministries and different departments and different programs that may have also registered their own domain names but didn't check in with the office, whatever office structure you have. And so there's easily a church of, let's say, mega church of 2,000, it would not be surprising there be 20 or 50 or even 100 domain names for all the various ministries that have been registered over time. And so just keeping track and tracking them is the first step. And by tracking, getting a list of the domains, keeping track of the email address that's connected to that domain name, the login, the registrar. Registrar would be GoDaddy, Google Domain, Namecheap. Those are some of the most popular ones. You have to keep track of all those. And then the expiration date, because this is one thing people don't say precisely correct, which is that we don't own domain names. We actually rent them domain names are actually rented on an annual basis up to 10 years, and you have to pay an annual fee to the internet corporation and the registrar, and that's what keeps a domain name running. So that would be step number one, getting those tracked and having those login information in a safe and secure location.
Now, that sounds so simple and easy, right? But I will tell you, literally last month, I was contacted by a church that I used to go to back in 2007 and 2008. And I used to volunteer for the ministry there. They were asking for the login information of both their church website as well as where their domains are registered. And I passed that information along, but I don't have it anymore. And here in 2022, over a decade later, they're still trying to track down some of that information. My heart is like sank for them, because I just know what a nightmare that could be if you don't have access to that. But yes, it's great to have that in a centralized location and share it with multiple people, right? Like, you just never know, the staffing, the volunteers move on. Let's talk about this domain name stuff. Now, can you say a little bit more about like the different functions of a domain name in particular? And, you know, there's a technical thing and a registrant thing and an owner. Mm-hmm. Like, it gets complicated, this jargon. I wonder if you could just, you know, detangle it for us just a little bit for those of us that are, you know, walking into it for the first time.
I want to talk about the critical things that churches and staff and volunteers need to understand in managing these domain names and the functions that they can provide. Because it's taken me 9 years to learn about all the inner workings of domain. And I'm not going to download all 9 years. I've gotten a better sense of what's critical and what's just geek talk. And so the first one, we talked about tracking in the domain names and keeping them registered. And then, well, on an annual basis, you want to evaluate, do you want to keep them or let them expire? So that would be one evaluation point for the list of domains. And then in terms of functions, domain names have what's called a who is record. And those are the authoritative contacts that have an email address, an address, and a phone number that are associated with each domain name. So there's the registrar, who is actually the person that registers the domain name. And that's the person that gets the super admin access to manage the domain name. So most registrars will recognize that email account or that phone number to verify, hey, you're the real registrar or registrant. Sorry, they use all these terms that are registry, registrar, registrant. So it can get a bit confusing because they all start with the same root, but they serve different functions. So to make sure the owner, owner of the domain, temporary owner, is the authoritative person, registrant information must be up to date. And then there's some associated contact information, technical contact, admin contact, and then billing contact. For today's purpose, get all of them to be the same would be the easier way to manage them. But for a large organization, you may want to have those as separate functions, especially if you have a separate person that's handling billing or a separate person that's handling registration, separate person handling tech, then you might assign those to different people. But then again, keep that on your tracking sheet because that's critical information for you to keep your internet presence up to date. Because that's as important as your physical building.
Yeah. Practically speaking, how often have you been contacted for a legitimate reason on one of those, the registrant, technical, or billing contact information? Like, when does that typically get triggered?
Well, the registrant information, registrant is when the domain needs to be renewed. And the second, when you need to change the settings on the domain. Technical is when you need to change the settings on the domain. But depending on the registrar, here's the other crazy thing about domains. Every registrar has their own lingo and their own authorization process. And so some will contact the technical person, some will contact the registrant. registrant is typically the most authoritative person that the technical people will verify that you should have access. So in the case of losing your password, well, the registrant has the best chance of getting the password reset. And so that's a quick snapshot of what those contacts.
Yeah. That, now, there needs to be an owner, like you said, like someone needs to chase all this down, use the central hub, but also syndicate the information elsewhere. What would you recommend, for example, for a church that might not have an IT staff, right? There's a, not every church has IT members or tech staff, et cetera. Sometimes they outsource it, sometimes they don't. It's just it's assumed. It's the guy that has the Mac in the room or who has the PC in the room. The one that's a little bit more geeky than everybody else, right? Most churches don't have an IT staff. What would you recommend for a church that does not have an IT staff handy? How do they approach all this stuff?
Well, sometimes you need IT help. So there are volunteers that are technically competent. There are contractors that are technically competent. So I'm kind of a contractor. I do a lot of freelance work with different clients. So that's a conversation that people have with me where I could help in for a short term. And then there's part-time staff that is starting to become a thing. So churches can actually hire part-time staff on a contract, like $500 a month or $1,000 a month, and maintain their social media, maintain their website, and that kind of thing. So they don't have to pay a full-time staff or even half-time staff. They can just outsource certain functions to help with those things. Now, I do want to take a step back and say, well, what are the functions? Well, two things. So one, you as the church, make sure you have the master key, which is the domain registration and admin. Okay. Long as you have that master key, all the other functions you can get it taken care of with IT staff, but keep that master key. Okay. Which is making sure you have login information to the domain name registration, which is at the registrar. Registrar is the GoDaddy, the Google domains, the Namecheap. Pork Bun is a new one that's becoming popular. Now, inside of that domain registration, there's a couple different things that I will mention that's good to know, but a bit technical. So it's good to know that every domain name has a pair of name servers. So name servers actually connect to the domain name and holds the authoritative records of the functions that the domain name will serve. Okay, so typically that's at the registrar. Sometimes if you're really technical, you want those name servers at a different place than the registrar for security purposes. So the really technical people want everything in separate locations so that in case one place is bombed, the other is still safe. And then on those name servers are what's called DNS records, domain name service records, DNS records. So in those DNS records, that's where you set the web hosting information, that's where you set the email hosting information, and that's where you set the subdomain information and email verification information and website information, verification information. And those are called records, DNS records. And so when you're setting up a web host or when someone's helping you set up a web host, they're putting in information into those DNS records, A records, CNAME records, TXT records. So I'm just giving you some lingo so that next time you hear it, it won't be, what in the world is that? You've heard it here, and I've explained it briefly, that's what controls.
Out, right?
Yeah, so that's what points to your website hosting, your email hosting, your subdomains, which can go to, let's say, your shortcut URLs. You can use shortcut domains, subdomains to point to sections of your website, landing pages, online streaming. So subdomains can come in handy for that. But just to give you a backstory, back end of what happens with these domain names and how they function in your church. Website, email addresses, and then you can connect other functions like, well, Google Workspace or Dropbox or Livestream.
So what, I mean, if I practically don't have staff, you're saying, go, let's find some volunteers first. There's surely someone in the community that might be a little bit more digitally native or web friendly. And then there's part-timers, and then there's consultants, mm-hmm. et cetera. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's important for the pastor or the person who's in charge of the website to at least understand all this jargon, all this, the glossary of words that we're talking about today? Or do you think it's okay to actually at least have one contact person to rely on, outsource that type of responsibility?
I would say that you don't need to know all the jargon. What you do need to have is the master key. Make sure you know the domain names you have, how to log in to administrate them, and then everything else can be delegated to a trusted person to manage. So that would be the short answer to that. But
okay.
In a small team, so often you'll need to understand some of those technical details.
Right. Now, on my side, like I said, I think I own almost 100 domain names right now. Mm. But what about for church? I mean, in every church that I've been a part of, they own multiple domains. Like you said, different ministry fronts, different events and programs. Everyone knows the brand things separately, et cetera. Now that we get a handle on some of that, the core basics of like what to do for housekeeping for domains, what are your thoughts on like, how many domain names should a church really need to register in today's world?
Ooh, well, that's going to depend on the church's strategy and how it wants to be publicly facing. So it used to be, before we had 1,000 domain extensions, churches would get the .com, .net, .org to make sure there's not brand confusion. But now there's 1,000 extensions. And so big brands like Amazon and Apple have to, for the sake of trademark and brand protection, they have to register 1,000 domains and keep them renewed every year. And there's companies like MarkMonitor is one of them. They're a corporate domain management company, and they will register 1,000 domain names with those brand extensions to make sure that no one else misuses them. Wow. So it's quite a legal and expensive effort. But the normal church, because now there's actually a domain extension for .church, it's very clear and very simple to just use that one domain name for your church presence in terms of website and in terms of email. So life.church was one of the pioneers, and they've done tremendous things in digital as well as physical church, hybrid church. And that's a great way to brand, and that's a great way to consolidate your web presence into one thing. Another one that's becoming popular is .live. So for the live stream, mm-hmm. they might say churchname.live. And so there's also .events. So .events could be useful. So using the ., I saw a mission agency use like 10 or 12 different dots for different functions. So instead of having slashes for sections of the website, they use the dot. So .info, .email, .church, .org, and so on. So you can be pretty creative with domain names.
Yeah, it sounds like you can be creative. Yeah.
So it's a new world. It's a little crazy, but you can be very strategic. And .church is very strategic for churches.
Yeah, I guess you don't need the .net or .biz anymore. They mm-hmm. used to be the ones that you pick up just in case, et cetera. But you can save your money and put it into other mm-hmm. domain names that a lot of them are even cheaper today. In fact, as we close out this interview, one of the things that you can do is you should check. You should actually check if a .church domain name is available if you don't have it already. One of the easiest places to do that is at name.church. Name.church is a good registrar. They offer the .church domain name. And actually right now, I believe there is a promo code available for all the listeners here today. If you use the promo code manage domains, no spaces, two words together, manage domains. If you use that at name.church, you get an actual discount. And so it might be worth just hopping over there, doing some quick searches, and grabbing that domain name. And there's, you know, tons of different ways to use a .church domain name if you're not going to use it as your primary. I know in a couple episodes ago, we just ran down several use cases that you can look up the previous episodes and listen to. I would say, DJ, one question about that is, I just had an email that came in from a previous listener of the podcast, and they were saying, hey, what if the name of my church, .church, right, is already taken? There's some other church in the world that already has it. It might be a church plant. I don't know what else to take. Do you have any suggestions for some other easy variations that it's intuitive, not complicated, and not adding like 16,000 letters to it? What are some other variations of a church?
Oh, here's
name?
Here's a little bit of trivia. So you're allowed a domain name that's 63 characters long. so not 1,000, but you're allowed up to 63 characters long. I've seen a few that are very, very long. I think Budweiser did a commercial. Can I say talk about beer? I think Budweiser registered a super long domain name for a Super Bowl ad once, just for fun. And then the people that could get there would get a prize. But
I wonder what the domain name
is. So if you have a common name church, let's say Calvary.church. Lots of Calvary Chapel churches out there, right? So one way is to add a prefix or a suffix to Calvary that's identified with your location. And what's nice about that is every keyword in your domain name is a signal to the search engine for your location and proximity. So when people are searching for churches near them, over 800,000 people are searching every month for a church near me. And so adding your city name or your county name, whatever your location name, to the name of your church, .church, would be a great way to find a domain name that's available. Sometimes people use acronyms. So let's say you're in Austin. So ATX Calvary.church would be a great way to do that. Some generic ways to check for a domain name availability is to add the word my. So mycalvary.church or calvaryweb.church. So just adding a few characters that are meaningful. Again, it's about meaning and memorability. And then you should be able to find a domain name that's available.
I love the adding the prefix or suffix and thinking through like geography. So city, county, state, before and after, that would be great. Okay, well, I hope that you are able to take advantage of that. For those of you that are listening, go to name.church, the website www.name.church. It's a registrar that offers the .church name. You can do a quick search there and then get a discount. Grab it while you can by using the promo code manage domains, all one word, no spaces. And you should be able to get that for a pretty good deal today. One of those things that's worth grabbing it now and staying in the game for a year with that domain name and figure out what can you do, how to experiment, etc. Now, if someone had a question about .church domain names in particular, DJ, or they want to learn more about your ministry and all the things that you're doing, what's the best way for someone to follow up after this conversation with you directly? How can they connect with you on the interwebs or on social media?
Well, in the show notes, you'll add a link to my personal contact, djchuang.com. And I'm DJ Chuang at Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Those are the places that I frequent.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sitting with us today. Today we're in the weeds. We're literally trying to actually get some tactical, practical stuff out the door because we've heard from a lot of church staffers that this stuff is a little bit intimidating, and hopefully we went through the glossary of terms and started to explain some of that. We would love to continue to answer your questions. Just a preview, our next episode, we're going to actually zoom out. Instead of being in the weeds, we're going to look at the big question of what does the future of the church look like? What does the future of the church look like? This is one of those questions we'd love to ponder over here at Church Tech Today. And hopefully next time we'll be able to actually answer that question and maybe even offer some things that you could use as a discussion launch pad for your own teams, because I think it's a very relevant question to everyone here today. Well, DJ, thank you so much for spending some time with me today. I really love hanging out with you.
Hey, always a joy to be with you, Kenny.
And everybody, thanks for hanging out with us today on the Church Online Podcast. We would love for you to let us know what you thought. Give us some more questions. You could reach me at kenny@churchtechtoday.com. We would also love for you to drop a positive review for the podcast so more church leaders, volunteers, and staff can discover this resource and we can actually all work on innovating and learning together. I'm Kenny Jiang. Make sure you get out there and engage. Be social. Stay social.